Love It or Leave It is brought to you by Built. It's 2026, and if you're still paying rent without Built, it's time for a change. Built is the loyalty program for renters that rewards you for your biggest monthly expense, rent. With Built, every rent payment earns you points that can be used toward flights, hotels, Lyft rides, Amazon purchases, and much more. And here's something to get excited about. Now Built members can earn points on mortgage payments for the first time. That means you can get rewarded wherever you live and unlock exclusive benefits from more than 45,000 restaurants, fitness studios, pharmacies, and other neighborhood partners. There's all kinds of great ways you can redeem your points. You can get a credit on your rent. You can take fitness classes. You can buy things on Amazon. You can get Lyft rides. There's lots of ways. There's also gift cards. There's lots of great ways you can redeem the points. It's simple. Paying rent is better with Built. And now owning a home can be better with Built too. Earn rewards and get something back wherever you live. Join the loyalty program for renters at joinbuilt.com/loveit. That's joinbuilt.com/loveit. Make sure to use our URL so they know we sent you.
If you love Positive America and want more of my political analysis, you should subscribe to my newsletter, The Message Box. I'm Dan Pfeiffer, former senior advisor to Barack Obama, and in Message Box, I break down what's actually happening in politics and what it's going to take to beat Donald Trump in MAGA. If you follow every poll and every twist and turn in the campaign, Message Box is for you. This isn't just hot takes. Every edition delivers clear analysis, behind-the-scenes insight, and practical strategy you can actually use, whether you're working on a race, organizing your community, or just trying to win the argument in your group chat. So if you're listening to this, hit pause, go to your browser, and head to crooked.com/yeswedan, because I have a special offer for Crooked Media fans. You'll get 20% off a Message Box for an entire year. So go to crooked.com/yeswedan.
Save big money on your next painting project now at Menards. From your kitchen and bath to doors and trim and even your ceilings, Dutch Boy has the perfect choice for your painting projects. Dutch Boy's DuraFighter is a tough paint and primer that provides great scrub resistance and durability. Save big on Dutch Boy paints. Plus, check out our weekly flyer on Menards.com for more great deals happening this week. Save big money at Menards.
What's up, Los Angeles? Welcome to Love It or Leave It, live from Dynasty Typewriter. We've got a great show for you tonight. Paul Feig is here. Monet Exchange is here. But first, let's get into it. What a week. That's fair. Oh.
Philosophy.
Well, you know what that sound means. The philosopher Isaiah Berlin, in a famous essay from 1953, quoted the Greek poet Archilochus, who wrote, "The fox knows many things, but the hedgehog knows one big thing. And that one big thing, I'm covered in tiny little fucking spikes." Now, because I was once young, but am now old, I remember how this analogy became part of the debate about the George W. Bush presidency. Does anyone else remember this debate coming up when George W. Bush was president? It's fine if you don't. Why would you? After 9/11, Bush was imbued with almost mythic leadership qualities. His approval rating soared into the 90s, even though he was still just this inarticulate, unimpressive guy.
I call upon all nations to do everything they can to stop these terrorist killers.
Thank you.
Now watch this drive.
We really graded this guy on a curve, specifically the curve an airplane makes when it flies into a skyscraper. But we Libs just didn't get it. Bush was a hedgehog. He knew one thing, the threat terrorism posed to society. Transformational leaders distill the world into simple moral terms. Churchill understood the coming danger of the Nazis. Gandhi understood the power of nonviolent resistance. Bill Clinton knew when Hillary Clinton was traveling for work. Of course, Bush's presidency is ultimately defined by the endless wars in Afghanistan and Iraq. It turns out a leader who only knows one thing is undone by all the things he didn't know. Anyway, this came to mind this week as we have a Republican president once again launching another preemptive war in the Middle East. And seeing how this administration has conducted this war, I found myself missing the days when we had a president who at least knew one thing
In a phone interview with CBS News, Trump said, "I think the war is very complete, pretty much," while the Pentagon posted, "We've only just begun to fight." So it's basically over, but we've only just begun to fight. What is this, every divorce in LA? Trump was pressed on the contradiction.
Mr. President, you've said the war is, quote, very complete, but your defense secretary says this is just the beginning. So which is it, and how long should Americans be prepared
for
this
war to last
for? Well,
I think you could say it
both. Trump went on, "If we subscribe to Everett's many worlds interpretation of quantum mechanics, then every possible outcome of a quantum event is in fact an actual outcome, another branch in a tree of parallel universes that exist in quantum superposition. Schrodinger's cat is dead in one and alive in another. The war in Iran is over, and it has only just begun. So it's a dumb question, you ugly pig bitch." As of this recording, 7 Americans are dead, and hundreds of Iranians have been killed, including many children at a school that appears to have been hit by an American cruise missile. As evidence mounted that the school was hit by U.S. strikes, Trump claimed that Iran was responsible.
"Did the United States bomb a girls' elementary school in southern Iran on the first day of the war and kill 175 people?
In my opinion, based on what I've seen, that was done by Iran.
Is that true, Mr. Hegseth? We're certainly investigating.
They're very inaccurate, as you know, with their munitions. They have no accuracy whatsoever. It was done by Iran."
Also, and you're never going to believe this, those girls flew themselves to Epstein's Island. Bunch of little Amelia Earharts. Crazy stuff. Trump was pressed on that claim during a press conference Monday.
"You just suggested that Iran somehow got its hands on a Tomahawk and bombed its own elementary school on the first day of the war. But you're the only person in your government saying this. Even your defense secretary wouldn't say that when he was asked, standing over your shoulder on your plane on Saturday. Why are you the only person saying this?"
"Because I just don't know enough about it. I think it's something that I was told is under investigation. But Tomahawks are used by others, as you know. Numerous other nations have Tomahawks. They buy them from us. But I will certainly, whatever the report shows, I'm willing to live with that report."
Of course, when he says live with the report, he means he's going to steal the report and put it in a box in his bathroom at home. It's hard to know if Trump even understands the gravity of what he's done.
"You just said it is a little excursion, and you said it is a war. So which one is it?"
"Well, it's both. It's both. It's an excursion that will keep us out of a war. And the war is going to be, for them, it's a war. For us, it's turned out to be easier than we thought."
Easier than we thought. What, was he worried the school might fire back? How are we supposed to joke about this? The news is so fucking heavy. I don't know how we're supposed to joke about it when the news is so fucking heavy. I need a drink, ideally one made by an acclaimed director.
Oh,
hi, Paul Feig.
Cheers to you.
Thank you, Paul Feig.
You're doing great work.
Oh, thanks a lot, Paul Feig. Fantastic. Is Amanda Seyfried in this? Because it's a Paul Feig triumph. The Housemaid, now available on demand. I do want this. Hold on. Tough week of news. The reason Trump has begun calling this war an excursion is because he's worried about oil prices. There are reports that Iran has been laying mines in the Strait of Hormuz. On Wednesday, 3 commercial ships were attacked near the strait. And in his first comments since becoming Iran's new supreme leader, Ayatollah Khamenei II, Death to America Boogaloo, announced via statement on state TV that Iran would continue to block the strait as a tool to pressure the enemy. "Well, I don't feel any pressure," declared Trump before asking Marco Rubio to invent, and I quote, "a Flintstone car, but real." Iran's new leader is the son of the previous leader who was killed by airstrikes and seems to be a younger version of his father, only more radical and now pretty angry about Trump killing his entire family, but always exciting to see a new generation get involved in politics, I guess. Meanwhile, according to Fox News host Brian Kilmeade, Trump told him that tankers waiting at the Strait of Hormuz should just simply stop being such pussies.
"Here's exactly what he said. These ships should go through the Strait of Hormuz and show some guts. There's nothing to be afraid of. They have no Navy. We sunk all their ships."
Here we have footage of Trump trying to convince oil tankers to go through the Strait of Hormuz.
No. Hey, go ahead. It's right in there.
Oh, Jimmy, right there. I'm in a hurry. My mom's watching the kids. I'm gonna get home. I'll come back later.
Oil prices have surged. The Energy Department announced that 172 million barrels of oil will be released from its strategic reserve over the next 4 months. But we use like 20 million barrels of oil per day. I used one on the way here. 172 million barrels is barely a week's worth. If we want that oil to last 4 months, we're going to need a bigger Hanukkah. But not to worry, the Pentagon has been laser-focused on what matters, barring press photographers from briefings about the war because they published photos of Hegseth that his staff considered unflattering. This is real. Unfortunately, and I am not proud of this, it's the most relatable Pete Hegseth has ever seemed to me. I also don't believe for a second that it was Hegseth's staff who found those photos unflattering. I know it's a lie because I have a great team here, and they are smart and they want what's best for me in the show. And at least once a month, they select a thumbnail photo of my face that undoes 3 years of therapy. Speaking of looking good, the Wall Street Journal reported this week that Trump has been gifting male members of his cabinet matching pairs of his favorite shoes. The loose one pictured on the right belonged to Marco Rubio. Trump's not even asking for sizes, really. He's just eyeballing it, and you get what you get. Scott Bessent had to cut off his big toes. Making your subordinates match you? What kind of loser freak does that? For those at home, that's me, Sarah, and Hallie at the Ambies in matching suits. I thought we looked pretty good. That's a good picture. Look at us. Said one female official of Trump's shoes, it's hysterical because everybody's afraid not to wear them. But it's not a cult. But if he gives you shoes, you have to wear them. At least they get some anonymity in the bathroom. Who's crying in the next aisle over? Go ahead, peek under the divider. Could be anybody. Anyway, back to the war. In amazing news for everyone physically at this show, the FBI has warned police departments in California that Iran might want to strike the state with drones in retaliation. A Reuters Ipsos poll found that just 27% of Americans support the war, incredibly low compared to previous conflicts, which is why when Lindsey Graham, a.k.a. the gay of Hormuz, said this.
We're marching through the world. We're cleaning out the bad guys. This is Ronald Reagan right. Plus. Our military is the best of all time. Iran is going down and Cuba is next.
In response, Megyn Kelly said this.
No one elected you as our commander-in-chief. Shut the fuck up. Get off the national scene. You've disgraced yourself and endangered our troops long enough.
Megyn, we had a Zoom to confer, and you can call Lindsey Graham a fag one time. You get one freebie. It's our gift to you. Kind of Airbnb with Shein, by the way. What's that? Usually she's in some sort of like red, like kind of like Hieronymus Bosch red kind of wall behind, you know, with the like the. All of this has contributed to Trump's unpopularity, his failure to address Americans' chief concerns over prices, and it's put Republicans on a path to defeat in the midterms, which is why on, yeah, that's right. Which is why on Monday, Trump told House Republicans that they must pass the SAVE Act, his election overhaul bill, to require a birth certificate or passport to vote.
And I'm not doing it for this reason at all. It'll guarantee the midterms. It'll guarantee the midterms. If you don't get it, big trouble, my opinion.
Why is he being coy about this? He incited a mob to storm the Capitol to overturn an election, and then he pardoned the mob. You can say you're doing it for that reason. We know you're doing it for that reason. The cat's out of the bag and pooping on Nancy Pelosi's desk. Things are looking so bad for Republicans that on Tuesday, White House Deputy Chief of Staff James Blair privately urged Republican House members to stop talking about mass deportations. Responded Stephen Miller, then how am I supposed to come? And it is pretty crazy because mass deportations were like the centerpiece of their 2024 platform. It's like if Joe Biden had to tell Democrats to stop talking about This week, Vote Save America is launching Project 218. This is our campaign to take back the House. We need as many people to sign up as possible, and we need you to get your friends and family to sign up, too. That's our first ask, to sign up and get five friends, five coworkers, five members of your family to sign up. This is where we are going to organize. We're going to find the best ways to get involved in the next 6 months. Spam texts from random candidates and organizations, they don't cut it. It's useless. We will give you the best ways to volunteer and donate and share good information. So please, please, right now, go to votesaveamerica.com and sign up. Pause this podcast and take 30 seconds to sign up now. Do come back. We have worked hard on the next joke. Now it's just us. This is just a moment for us. Hey, I noticed no one's taking out their phones to sign up right now. Great. So right back in my face. What do you say to Trump when his regime change war backfires and winds up installing someone even worse? I had told you so. We're now going to have a debate in Congress over whether to approve additional funding for the Pentagon to the tune of $50 billion, or slightly less than what I'm spending on this fucking wedding. This guy knows what I'm talking about. All right. And this is despite reports that the Pentagon has been struggling to spend the $1 trillion it already has. The Daily Beast has a story that the Pentagon has been on a spending spree, including an almost $100,000 Steinway grand piano for the Air Force Chief of Staff's home and $21,000 on a handmade Japanese flute. Jesus Christ, how'd they find such a cheap flute? Or maybe I'm getting ripped off by my wedding vendors. Fuck. Anyway, back to the war. The vast majority of Republicans will fall in line and support more funding. The vast majority of Democrats will oppose it. And yet, House Minority Leader Hakeem Jeffries wouldn't commit either way, saying on Sunday, we'll cross that bridge when we get to it. No, don't cross the bridge. You don't even have to get to the bridge. You could stop walking right now. Delaware Senator Chris Coons told Crooked's own Matt Berg, I would not vote to authorize this war through a supplemental. Okay, but he also said, I am interested in and will listen to arguments about what's necessary to protect our troops. I have to tell you, I feel like I am not smart enough to understand these complexities. Like, I can't appreciate the nuance. You're all trying to be foxes, but I'm in the market for a hedgehog. There's actually only one thing we need to know. Trump is an unfit fucking moron. Do not fund his illegal war. Do not enable him. That's it. I know that we are foxes by nature, but it's hedgehog time, bitches. Oh, you fired Gnome, so we should fund DHS now? No can do. I'm covered in tiny little spikes. You want funding for a war Congress didn't approve because $1 trillion isn't enough? No can do. I'm rolled into a tight ball and covered in tiny little fucking spikes. Isaiah Berlin's conclusion in that essay, which I know you're all fucking fully horny to get more details about, was that sometimes greatness comes when foxes want to be hedgehogs. Sometimes the world is complicated, but sometimes the answer isn't. And that answer is a second martini from Paul Feig. Thank you, Paul Feig.
Cheers, John. Cheers.
Call this one the housemaid. Because you just know there's a twist. We'll be right back. All right.
Hey, don't go anywhere. There's more of Love It or Leave It coming up.
Love It or Leave It is brought to you by Willie's Remedy.
Your favorite.
I love Willie's Remedy. It's awesome. They prompt us in these ads and it says, how does Willie's make you feel? And how is it different from other cannabis products or alcohol? So it's different than alcohol because it's not alcohol. You know what alcohol does. Mm. But this is my favorite edible thing that I've had in like a very, very long time. It's also like you can just have a little bit because it works pretty fast and just like a nice social. No, I'm not. I'm not. We have some in the office. I'm not averse to it. A lot of non-alcohol alternatives promise a great feeling, but don't deliver on the buzz. With Willie's, you'll feel relaxed and euphoric in only 15-ish minutes. That's right. Willie's is a premium THC product.
15 minutes, huh?
Yeah, it is. It's fast. It's
That's
fast.
Good to know.
It's really good. Oh, you hear Willie Nelson is making a weed thing. You're like, oh, boy.
Is good night, you know?
But you know what? The man knows what he's doing. Yeah. Inspired by Willie's way of living where peace flows freely and hangovers are a thing of the past. It's low-calorie, low-sugar alcohol alternative, delivering a fast-acting, euphoric social buzz without the regrets that come from alcohol. Social tonics come in 5-milligram and 10-milligram doses. I do the 5-milligram. I just have a little bit and it's easier to measure. You can like, with the 5-milligram, you can even have half of a, like, because that's 5 milligrams is basically in one shot worth of it. Mm. And I will have half a shot and feel like a little bit, you know?
Pretty good.
It's nice. You can enjoy the tonics as a shot, sipped over ice, mixed into your favorite mocktail. Willie's is not that feared edible you ate too much of in college. It's definitely not. Each bottle of Willie's is third-party lab tested for accurate dosage so you can trust and customize your experience. Unique blend of THC, CBD, CBG, and L-theanine delivers a feeling of calm, clarity, euphoria, and relaxation. Willie's sold out 3 times in the first 6 months with over 50,000 plus happy customers, and they just restocked. I have got a bunch of bottles. I just ordered some to have in the house. Willie's ships directly to your doorstep in 40 plus states. Order now at drinkwillies.com. Use code LOLI for 20% off your first order, plus free shipping on orders over $95, and enjoy life in the high country. That's drinkwillies.com. Use code LOLI. Drinkwillies.com. Use code LOLI. This episode is presented by Planned Parenthood Federation of America. No matter where you live or how much money you make, you deserve to get the health care you need when you need it. 1 in 4 people across the country have come to a Planned Parenthood health center for care, but in a politically motivated attempt to block patients from using their Medicaid insurance to get essential care at Planned Parenthood, the Trump administration and its backers in Congress passed a law to defund Planned Parenthood. As many as 200 Planned Parenthood health centers could close, cancers will go undetected, STIs will go untreated, and patients won't get the birth control or abortion care they need to plan their families and their futures. But Planned Parenthood isn't backing down. They're still showing up for patients, providing essential care, and making sure everyone can get the life-saving, life-changing services they need. It's getting harder for families to keep up with the cost of living, from the grocery store to the doctor's office. Stripping away access to affordable health care is a direct hit to our communities. Planned Parenthood believes health care is a right, not a privilege, and they will never stop fighting for your right to quality, affordable health care. But they need supporters like you. Donate now to support Planned Parenthood at plannedparenthood.org/defend. And we're back! First of all, one note. Subscribers are loving the bonus content through Friends of the Pod. Pod Save America Only Friends is our new subscriber-only episode of Pod Save America. How many people here have listened to it? It's really fun. It's just for the friends. That's why it's called Only Friends. You can also get Only Tabs, our newsletter from Reed Cherlin, Paula Coaster with Dan Pfeiffer, Terminally Online. Subscribe to Friends of the Pod. Support our independent media company. We're trying to build a pro-democracy media company. We need your help. So if you haven't signed up yet, do us a favor, go to crooked.com/friends. All right. I said open tabs. What'd I say? I said only tabs? I said only tabs. It's open tabs. I've already had a martini. My first guest is a phenomenal director, most recently of The Housemaid as well. What the fucking hell is that? As well? Oh, what? I don't even understand my own intro. Anyway, he's an amazing director. Please welcome Paul Feig.
Wow.
Hi, thanks for being here. Come on.
You nailed it, John.
I nailed it.
Oh, my God.
So first of all, the last time you were here, I was so excited you were here, because the last time you were here, you made cocktails.
Yeah.
And once again, you're making cocktails, because this is your own gin, Artingstall Gin.
Yes.
And I'm a gin person, as we discussed. Are there any trends that you're getting on board with drinking? Because for a while they were putting drinks with dry ice. And then there was a lot of science around the drinks.
Yeah, I don't all that kind of molecular mixology. I don't know. I just like a good straight up martini.
Cheers.
There we go.
This is good.
The real thing.
This is. Mm-hmm. We're in business now.
If something's great, don't mess with it. I like to say. Here, John, I brought you my book.
Oh, your book.
Yes.
Oh, thank you. Cocktail time. I like, you know, because I'm gonna. Oh, thank you. This is such a nice little signature from you in there. I'm gonna look through this because I want to pick out some fun cocktails because I'm gonna get married in a couple months.
Yeah,
and we get to.
I hear.
And we're gonna cocktail time. Great advice, embarrassing stories, and 125 classic and original drinks.
There you go.
I want to make sure I read it. I'm gonna find a cool gin drink in there because obviously everyone knows a martini and I love a martini.
Yeah.
Bill, our producer, said, "What kind of gin drink do you like?" And I said, "Martini." And he said, "Okay, what's another gin drink you like?" And I said, "A second martini."
There you go. I like it.
So the last time you were here, you were promoting Another Simple Favor, and you said you were breaking your no sequel rule. Tonight, I'll do it again because apparently you're already working on a sequel to The Housemaid.
Yeah. Oh, thank you. Yay. Nice. Thanks. Yeah, we are. We're going to start shooting in the fall.
And now in the first movie, Amanda Seyfried and Sydney Sweeney do not kiss.
No. they slap.
Something to think about. Because in A Simple Favor,
yes.
Blake Lively and Anna Kendrick do kiss.
Yes.
And it seems like it's stupid that they didn't kiss in this movie. Kiss, 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 you know? People like kissing in the movies.
Well, there's a lot of kissing between Sydney and Brandon Sklenar.
Oh, yeah, a guy and stuff.
Yeah.
So have you thought about making a sequel to Bridesmaids? Because even if it was bad, you'd make so much money.
I know, exactly.
You should, it's stupid not to.
Well, I know, that's the problem. Most people do those sequels just to make that money. But I don't know. For some reason, Bridesmaids to me feels like it's just a singular event because, you know, yeah.
With that attitude.
About, like another, exactly. I know, trust me, everybody wants us to make one, to make a lot of money. But I don't know, when you get away with something, and that one we really got away with just because everything kind of worked. You know, like a sequel would be what, Another Crazy Wedding? Like the whole reason that movie works is that Kristen Wiig's character is going through this terrible time and she's a mess and then she kind of fixes herself. So you can't do another one where she is a mess again.
No, I guess we could spend 5 minutes thinking about something else.
Yeah. You coming to the writer's room, John?
I felt like you're turning something over. I think you're finding your way there. I think there's a dark forest in front of you, and on the other side is a sequel to Bridesmaids.
Just cut through it. Oh, nice.
I think you just have to enter that forest and get a little lost.
There you go.
Yeah, yes, obviously.
There you go.
Everyone thinks of divorce first.
Well, you know, it's our 15-year anniversary, and
yes.
The Oscars on Sunday, the cast is going to reunite on stage.
That's so exciting.
Yeah.
It's so funny. It's so good. It's still
thanks.
So good.
It holds up. It's really
It really
nice.
Does. It's yeah, so fun.
I just had to remaster the whole thing with new sound, and we bumped up the quality and everything.
Yeah, you said that now Kristen Wiig shoots first.
Yes, exactly.
And
yes.
And then at some point Jabba comes in, but doesn't look like Jabba.
Right, exactly, right.
That's cool.
I never took you for a Star Wars nerd, my friend.
Why not?
Because I am.
Oh, you are?
Yes.
So,
but only the first two. It's gotten too wonky for me now.
Oh, really?
Who's with me on this? I should have saved that for
later. The first two movies?
Yeah. A New Hope.
Since, yes, of course.
And Empire Strikes Back.
But it's pretty funny to be a Star Wars fan that's been out since Return of the Jedi. It's like, okay. So
that's
been a long time. They've made a lot of stuff.
I just re-watched those first two movies over and over again.
If you're a fan of 5% of something.
Yeah.
What are you? I guess, yeah.
But OG.
Okay. No, believe me, I'm with you.
Thank you.
But Andor, did you watch Andor?
No. And I know I should because I know it's very political and I love politics. But here's the thing. My issue with Star Wars, controversial, is I saw the first Star Wars opening weekend when I was 13 or 14. That place, that theater, which was packed, every minute at least there was a giant laugh. That movie was funny.
Yes.
And then Empire Strikes Back was funny. And then it started to get not funny. They start taking themselves too seriously. So I want to get, let's go back to the fun Star Wars.
Oh, I totally agree. Well, I agree. I think.
I'm making a lot of enemies right now, too.
No, I don't think.
The internet already hates me because of Ghostbusters. Now I'm really fucked.
I don't think that's true. I don't think you're wrong about that. I think I don't think Star Wars. I like Andor in part because it does take itself seriously, but it meets the threshold. It is serious. I don't mind with something serious and takes itself seriously, and I don't mind with something silly and doesn't take itself seriously. The problem is when the prequels are silly but act like they're high art. It's like, I don't need that. If you're camp, be camp. I love camp.
Yeah.
But Andor's a drama.
No, and I do need to watch that because, I mean, that's Tony Gilroy, right? So
It is. He's been on this very show.
Oh, my gosh.
Now,
I'm honored.
The last time you were here, I tried to get you to talk about the drama around Blake Lively, and I won't do that again.
Jesus.
Why
did I come back?
Did Sydney Sweeney talk at all about what it was like to be in the Capitol on January 6th? I'm just kidding.
Man.
That's not fair. I know it's not fair. That's why it's a joke. What? That's what upset you? I said the craziest shit during the monologue.
Sydney's a sweetheart. That's all I'm going to say.
She seems great.
She's
it
fantastic.
Was all crazy. I was just joking. My God.
That's the only reason he brought me on the show, was that joke.
No, I wanted to have a martini. So, transition.
Cut to.
So, I wanted to ask you about, because we talked about Freaks and Geeks last time you were on, and a lot of that flows from, you wrote a book about it. Kick Me, right? That kind of gets at some of your childhood experiences as well. And we already resolved that it is not based on Long Island, where Judd Apatow is from. It is based on Michigan, where you are from. And I just want to be on the record as saying that, that I've learned from the last show and remember that we had a conversation about it.
Yep.
Even though on some level, when I see it, it does take place in my high school. And I can't change that.
But it should be universal, though.
Yeah, it is universally for me because it's in my high school.
Very good.
But you wrote great stories about growing up in the 70s, but a lot of them are about discovery. Can you talk about finding your dad's Nazi flag? They were like, what?
It sounds worse. No, my father was in World War II, and he came back. He went in, one of the people that went in and took over, you know, in Germany, all that stuff. And he and his friends took back all this kind of war paraphernalia. And he had it in a bag in the back of his closet. I used to sneak into my dad's closet and look through cool stuff. And there was, like, you know, knives and all this stuff. And once at the bottom, I was like, oh, what's this red thing? I pull it out. And I unspool it like, wow, hey, this is cool. Look at this flag. And I'm like 8 or 9. So I go, like, I want to show this off to the neighborhood. So I went and I taped it up in our front window, this giant Nazi flag. And I'm like, this is cool. And then I see my mom's car coming around the corner. I'm like, oh, she's going to be really excited that I have this up. And I see the car all of a sudden go, and like screech into the driveway. My mother comes running in and like rips it. I was like, what? I thought Dad would think it's really cool to have this up. She goes, do you know what that is? No. So I learned about Nazis from my mother.
Yeah, it's, it is... Obviously, the context is the most important thing. And I want to be on the record of saying the context is the most important thing.
There you go.
It's a great design. They really nailed it. I'm sorry. They did. They fucking nailed it.
Well, it was from India, right? It was it's supposed to be like a good luck sign
it's
or been, something.
Been, it's that? In a yeah. few places. It was sort of as like, I think it had multiple origin points of, but it is like a kind of very, like it's, you know, it's like there's the Nike swoosh, the swastika. They both crushed for well, different reasons. What? I hate them, Nazis. Nike's great. Hate the Nazis. I'm on the record.
Well, there was a Lenny Bruce joke about it. He said, oh, we'll do 4 sevens. It's lucky. You know.
So you also wrote about being a virgin until you were 24. And I'm just curious, like, what was... I'll tell you what I felt when I read that. It was like, wow, like, what's your secret?
Being terrified of everything. Yeah, I was just, you know, look, I couldn't get undressed in gym class, you know, so the thought of, like, exposing yourself that emotionally and physically to any other person was abhorrent to me, even though, you know, I wished I could. But, you know, it's weird when you're, especially in the, I mean, I guess it's probably this way now, but in the 70s, everybody was so kind of, you know, disco and all this. So I was in high school from 76 to 80, and it was all, you know, people going nuts. So all my classmates were having sex, clearly. And I remember once I walked out of my class, and this kid who I hated, he was like a bully and stuff. He goes like, hey, he yelled to his friend, like, if she's not going to kiss, she's not going to fuck. And I was just like, God. So, I mean, all these things would happen. You go like, it's so unattractive, everything about this. So I put it off till 24.
I mean, do you think there is a connection between what you just described and the fact that you have built a career being a great director of great female comedians? That there's some, like, is that connected to you at all?
Yeah, I was an only child. I was really close with my mom. My dad wasn't around a lot because he ran a store. And my next door neighbors were, it was a family of 8 kids, 6 of them were girls, and they were all my best friends. So I always, you know, it's very much pro, like, if you have boys, make sure they're friends with girls, you know, because I just kind of grew up around, so I knew what girls were about as much as, you know, I could, but then seeing, and watching old movies with my mom, of, like, you know, from the 30s and 40s of Rosalind Russell and, you know, Katharine Hepburn and all these strong, you know, female characters who were equals with the men. And then being in love with comedy, especially like in the 70s and 80s when women just started to become props, you know, for guys to be funny against and whatever. And I was like, that's not the women I know aren't like that. The women I know are funny and cool and all this stuff. So it was like I never latched into that sort of male, you know, not necessarily toxic masculinity, although some of it is, but just that kind of like guys rule and women are props thing. And so I just always wanted to tell these female stories.
That's nice.
Oh.
Well, speaking of, you have this movie, The Housemaid, and that led us to want to play a game.
Mm. I love games.
Disgusting, depraved, debased. Yep, political news has been pretty gross recently. In fact, we want to challenge you in a game we're calling Sexual Congress, or Sexual Congress.
I don't want to think about Congress as sexual at all. Do we go on?
Yeah, it sucks. I'll read you a salacious scenario. You'll tell us if it's from an erotic thriller or actual political news. Are you ready? First
ready.
Up, a Texas gubernatorial candidate's marriage implodes after he discovers his wife's secret affair with a teenage boy.
That's got to be real.
It is an erotic thriller. It's from Netflix's The Hunting Wives.
Oh, there you go.
A Texas attorney general's marriage implodes after his wife discovers his affair with a Christian influencer who has 7 children.
Real.
That is real. It's from the news. That's Texas Attorney General Ken Paxton, who got served with divorce papers last summer after his wife found out about a secret romance with a Christian influencer. It's a second affair we know about. So he's pretty bleak.
He's the gift that keeps on giving, that guy.
Pretty bleak.
That too bleak.
Next up, a glamorous girl boss and her brutish lover travel the globe in their specifically outfitted sex play.
That's got to be a...
Sex plane.
Oh, sex plane. That's got to be a movie.
You'd think it was, but it's in fact...
Oh, what am I talking about? It's Corey and...
Yes, it's Corey and Christine.
Oh,
no.
You got it. The love plane. There they are. Oh, God. Oh.
Boy, there it is.
Oh, God. You can almost smell it from here, can't you?
What I think about when I see this plane is, like, whatever's going on with the sheets. Like, when you go to a hotel and they have, like, the sheets and there's some kind of, like, decorative blanket. And, like, the first thing I do, I walk into the hotel, I was like, get that as far away from the bed as humanly fucking possible. That thing has not been washed since it was put here the day the hotel opened. Like, that blanket is not washable. What is that?
Is that the blanket that the pilot got fired for not bringing?
No. It might be. It could be. I could be.
I would like it if it was that big for Binky.
Next up, a man embarks on a dark, thrilling journey into the heart of the gay leather BDSM scene.
Well, that could be anybody. True.
It is. It happens to be the plot of the film Cruising, starring Al Pacino.
Oh, well, Jesus. But I think it could apply to most of Congress.
Hey, did you see that in the theater?
Cruising? No. I actually saw it later. I remember when it came out. I don't think I was old enough to be able to get in when it came out.
Right, I'm trying to remember what year it would have been. Oh, it was 1980. So you could have just gone.
I was right on the cusp. I had a date once. I wanted to take this girl to see The Shining, and I was in love with her, and she was 19, and I was 16, and they wouldn't let it. They carded me, wouldn't let me in. So we had to go see the Get Smart movie, the nude bomb, and she never went out with me again. So there you go.
I don't think, like, The Shining is so romantic.
Well, like, I don't know what any better. She wanted to see it because she thought it was cool. I was terrified. I hated scary movies back then. I was really scared.
Oh, Shining's pretty good.
Shining's great. You know what's better though? The book. I like the book.
The book is amazing.
Yeah.
I like the book. The challenge he had in adapting it is.
Oh yeah.
Is that he becomes a beast?
Yeah.
It's more.
Exactly.
It's really much more.
Yeah.
It's more magical, the book.
And I'm like an asshole for being a movie director
saying the
book is better.
No. I want you to know something. If there's any audience that is receptive to the book is better, book is better crap.
Unless I make a movie about a book, then the movie's better.
Yeah, I want to read Rebecca.
Yeah.
Because I've never read it, but the Hitchcock movie's great, but I want to read the book.
Totally.
But that's neither here nor there. next up. A high-powered woman finds herself wanting more than just safety from her trusted bodyguard.
Oh, that's a movie.
It's a movie, but it's also true because it is the plot of 1992's The Bodyguard. It's also a show, The Bodyguard, and Kyrsten Sinema. According to a lawsuit filed by somebody's estranged wife, Sinema sent him a photo of herself in a towel, suggesting he bring MDMA on a work trip, and said she could guide him through a psychedelic experience. Cool.
Wow.
Yeah.
Like an ayahuasca thing going on there.
Yeah, it's like, ooh. centrism.
I do like her glasses, I will say.
She has good glasses.
Yeah,
she has good glasses. You know, she's broken cock
situation.
If I can
say something positive about Kyrsten Sinema.
You won the game.
Oh, did I win? That was a nail biter. It was a nail biter.
The Housemaid is streaming on demand right now.
It is. Available for.
But they
for
don't kiss sale. In this one.
Well, there is kissing.
There's kissing.
Kissing and sex, yeah.
And exactly. There's sex.
Yes. Sorry. Then you got to go to watch Another Simple Favor, then you'll see.
And then there's Blake Lively and Anna Kendrick kissing that one.
Yes. Yes, exactly.
We'll be right back.
Hey, don't go anywhere. There's more of Love It or Leave It coming up.
Love It or Leave It is brought to you by Sundays. When it comes to dog food, it seems like you have to make a choice. You can either have fresh and healthy, or you can have easy to store and serve, but never both. But you don't have to choose anymore thanks to Sundays. Sundays was founded by a veterinarian and mom, Dr. Tori Waxman, who got tired of seeing so-called premium dog foods filled with fillers and synthetics. So she designed Sundays, air-dried real food made in a human-grade kitchen using the same ingredients and care you'd use to cook for yourself and your family. Every bite of Sundays is clean and made from real meat, fruit, and veggies with no kibble. That means no weird ingredients you can't pronounce and no fillers. And the best part, you just scoop and serve. No freezer, no thawing or prep, no mess. Just nutrient-rich, clean foods that fuel their happiest, healthiest days so you get more of them to share together. Huge fan of Sundays, huge fan of kind of the air-dried dog food. It's healthy. It's better for them than the kibble, but it doesn't take all the mess of like getting out of the fridge, you know?
No, I can't stop eating it myself.
Yeah, he has a little bowl next to his desk. Make the switch to Sundays. Go right now to sundaysfordogs.com/loveit50 and get 50% off your first order, or you can use code loveit50 at checkout. That's 50% off your first order at sundaysfordogs.com/loveit50. sundaysfordogs.com/loveit50 or use code loveit50 at checkout. Love It or Leave It is brought to you by Bombas. Spring is here. And while the resolutions of 2026 are evolving into outdoor adventures, our top priority hasn't changed. Maximum comfort. From morning jogs to weekend errands, Bombas is here to upgrade your everyday go-tos with a spring in your step. The all-new Bombas sports socks are engineered with sports-specific comfort for running, golf, hiking, skiing, snowboarding, and all sport. They're cushioned where you need it most, sweat-wicking and loaded with other tech features to keep you comfy and locked in. For those everyday around-the-house resolutions, Bombas has you covered. Resolutions? It's fucking March. Bombas also has you covered with the comfiest footwear imaginable. I have the Friday slides. I wear them all the time. Wore them to Pilates today. They're great. They're super comfortable. You can wear them to the pool. If you go to the pool, you can wear them to walk the dog. You can wear them to the gym. They're great. I genuinely use them basically every day. And for every item you purchase, an essential clothing item is donated to someone facing housing insecurity. One purchased, one donated, with over 150 million donations and counting. Head on over to bombas.com/loveit and use code loveit for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/loveit. Code loveit at checkout. And we're back. You know my next guest from Drag Race and Traitors and Sibling Rivalry, plus her new stand-up tour, High Heels, Bad Knees. Please welcome Monet Exchange. Hi.
Hello.
So good to see you.
Thank
you for being here.
Oh, hello.
Hi, Monet.
Hi. Oh. Also, correction, Sydney Sweeney was not storming the Capitol because she was at home trying on her jeans.
Yeah, she was. She was trying on those jeans.
Those things are so tight, girl. She can't walk upstairs in them things. Can you imagine?
It'd be awful. I'd like the skinny jeans era, and I do miss it.
Absolutely not.
Really?
Skinny jeans? Oh, my God. And they were all low-rise, too? Awful.
It's funny because everyone would make fun of skinny jeans, and I'd be like, I like them. I like wearing them because I'm little and I like, but I'm learning. These pants are not skinny jeans. I'm adapting and growing and changing and trying to stay current with the times, because you realize that, like in my mind, dad outfits are what dads wore when I was a kid.
Correct.
But the dad outfit moves through time with us. Uh-huh. And then all of a sudden you realize, ask not for whom the dad outfit tolls. It tolls for thee.
No, I have a lot of thigh, a lot of ass. I can't be wearing no skinny jeans. It's not a good look on me. No, I like oversized, baggy. I like looking like I'm going to middle school my entire life, you know?
So Drag Race season 18 is airing now. Are you watching the current season?
I am watching. Bob and I, we do a podcast, Sibling Watchery, where we review episodes of Drag Race. And it's a good season. It's a good batch of girls. The median age is now like in their 30s. So they're more respectable queens. They actually have a point of view. Last season, they were all like 22. I was like, ew, get out of here. You don't know anything about life. What are you talking about? Yeah.
But yeah, and you know a lot about life because people in their 30s know a lot about life.
Yes, I am now in my late mid 30s. And I'm having a good time. It's nice on the side. I'm closer to 40 now than 30, and it feels good. And I'm aging decently, and I'm not mad at it. Yeah, I think I'm doing good. Although sometimes I see my agent, white women, like, they gasp. And then I realize, you know, out of drag, like, you know, in drag, I look like this beautiful goddess. Like, out of drag, when I forget to shave my head, because I'm a balding black man. I'm not bald. I'm balding. And the hairline's giving cul-de-sac, you know what I'm saying? Uh-huh. So I look like all my life I had to fight.
Yeah. Well, so this ring here, uh-huh. That's from the Hebrew God, but the top here is from a Jewish man in Beverly Hills. So in a sense, so like this organic, this sort of still from the Jews, but yeah. But like, so sort of, so like sort of gut, yeah, you get, you know what I'm saying? So that's what I did. I simply emotionally couldn't go bald. I respect people who have the confidence to do it. I don't have it.
Well, I have a good head.
You have a great head. You look great.
You know, I have a good head. I give good head. It's all good, you know?
Do you think queens should be playing fictional characters on Snatch Game instead of real celebrities?
Wow, this is a point of contention. You know, some people are like, please stop making up characters. Why are you playing Sasquatch? Why are you playing the devil, whatever? And I'm like, guys, we're now 18 seasons in and also 10 seasons of All-Stars. So there's almost 30 seasons of Drag Race. Like, you're kind of running out of the good celebrities. Like, who are you going to be? Like, Pat Sajak? Like, I don't... So
wore a wig.
he did it. Did he?
Yeah.
Really? Pat bald. He didn't go to Turkey.
He's alive or dead?
He's alive.
He's alive. So yeah. I don't know. Oh, so then he could be litigious. I think he wore a wig. That's based on my recollection. If it's wrong, I'm sorry.
Well, yes? It was great. And like, so I'm all about making up a character. I'm like, if you're making up like your grandma, like no, like give us like a because Sasquatch is a celebrity. Jesus is a celebrity
for sure.
They're all celebrities. So it has to be something like that. Not your cousin Vinny. I don't know Vinny. You know.
What were you gonna say, Paul?
You have a great head of hair, by the way.
Oh my God, thank you so
much.
It's
a beautiful head of hair.
No, I was gonna say, for years I've wanted to be a judge on Drag Race, and they won't let me do it.
Why haven't you been?
What?
Thank you. I would love to.
That is crazy. They need to have you on. Can I tell you, when I walked up the backstage and I saw you there, I am a huge fan of yours. Obviously, the amazing movies you've done, all the stuff you've done. I know you and I love you from Mr. Poole, from Sabrina, the Teenage Witch. Wow. Yes. I watch every single Thank episode you, of Sabrina. I used to walk around my house pointing at the toaster like, you know what I mean?
Oh my goodness.
Yes.
Thank you. Thank you.
I had to say that.
That's a deep cut. I love it. Thank you.
Also in a film called Ski Patrol.
Ski Patrol.
Oh my God.
And there were two movies. One was called Ski Patrol and the other was called Ski School. And I don't remember which, and one of them was kind of a little bit more sexual.
Ski School was raunchy. Yes. Ours was family friendly.
Yeah, yours was the family. Ski Patrol was family friendly.
Yes.
Ski School was super raunchy.
Ooh.
Yes.
What are we doing at Ski School?
there are boobs on the mountain.
Oh,
just
wow.
Just boobs out on the mountain.
There's boobs and an outhouse that turns over on somebody and they get shit all over.
Oh,
so
God.
We were not going. We were going much classier.
Yeah, Ski Patrol is the thinking man. Ski school.
Yeah, exactly right. Oh my.
Are there any changes you would make to Drag Race?
Oh yes. Okay. One, I think that RuPaul, love her. We need to have another queen on the dais, right? I think that like RuPaul famously would not have any other queens. It can only be her. Raven has made a brief cameo, but not just really judge. So I think we need to get other queens. Like there are seasoned queens from the show who have done and gone on to do amazing things. Bring a Trixie back. Bring a Bianca back there. Bring them on exchange. I don't know. Someone behind there. I think they should do that. And I think we need to mix up the challenges. I think some of them, just put them to bed. Like, Snatch Game is getting worse and worse every season. I'm like, put it to bed. Think of something new. There are so many other games you could do that are fun.
Yeah, I feel like what's the kind of character that's allowed on Snatch Game? It's like, is it funny? If it's funny, you can do it.
Yeah.
But it's got to be fun.
It's got to be funny, yeah.
It's got to have a little game to it.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah. That's intense.
So now, Paul.
Yeah. Yes?
You have a story in your memoir.
Wow, you're so classy.
About dressing up in your mother's clothes.
Yes.
Which is, to my mind, drag
It is drag.
It is.
What did you take away from your experience of doing drag as a child?
No, I always root around in my, clearly when I found my father's Nazi flag, I used to root around in my parents' closet. And I found this like blonde wig that I put on once, and I thought I looked really pretty. And so then I went in my mom's closet and I found these clothes. I put on this dress, and she had these like Nancy Sinatra like white tall boots. Uh-huh. I put them on, and so I kind of went into the living room. I was kind of dancing around, and all of a sudden I look up, and all these kids from the neighborhood I know are staring through the window. And I'm like, oh hey! And I try to pass it off, and they go like, your mom's just been in a car accident. So I go like, oh my God. So I go running. They go, it's over here. So I go running out in this outfit, like, Mom, are you okay? And I'm standing there, like, oh my God. And they're pulling her out of the car, and she's okay, but she's shaking. And so I'm like so sad. And then every eye in the neighborhood, like, what the fuck are you wearing? And oh my God, it was just.
Belly. Paul, that story took a turn I was not ready for. I was not ready for that turn, Paul.
Wow. So Monet.
Coming to a theater near you.
So you appeared in a 36-hour edition of Survivor, which is just about half the amount of time I spend on the real Survivor. Fuck. What was your 36-hour Survivor experience like?
Okay, I have to tell you first. So first, they send this email. And, you know, people send random – you get random emails all the time. Like, fake ones. Like, hey, come and be on John Lovett's podcast. It's some fake thing. They said they're going to pay you $5,000. They're always fake. There's all these all the time. So I get the request for it. I'm like, this is nonsense. But I was like, just in case. Let me just forward it to my agent. Just in case. Ended up being real. They wanted to bring 8 influencers to Fiji and do the entire experience. And I was like, okay, they're bringing 8 influencers. They're going to take it easy. They're not going to do it. They're going to, like, put the rain on and off for us. You know, they're going to – you know, God is going to do his thing. No, it was the legit thing. And Jeff said it was one of the worst storms they've had in the past 15 years doing the
when
show.
When was this?
This was in May. This was May something to something. Mm. So, y'all, I'm not kidding you. It started raining at 3 p.m. It did not stop raining until 6 a.m. the next day. But you don't have your... So we had to build our own shelter for real. They were not taking it easy on us. So we were just sitting, getting rained on for over 12 hours. And I was like, this is going to be my 13th reason. And I am going to unalive myself on this beach. I was so cold. Why am I cold and wet in Fiji? Like, that's not what I want, you know? So it was... But it was fun. And I would totally do the real thing.
You would do the real thing?
I absolutely would, yeah. I love Survivor.
But last night I went, so Rob has a podcast, is a big Survivor podcast.
Yeah.
And so last night I went, they did a live show, and it was actually the first time I watched Survivor since I was voted off.
Really?
Yeah, it was like a big moment for me. I was like getting back into it.
Yeah.
And then I sort of needed to step back from it because, you know, like you can love the theater, but if you're like, say, the understudy for Hamilton and they call you up and they say, we'd like you to be Hamilton, and they send you out there and you're like, I'm not going to miss my shot. And then you shit yourself. Like, you can still love the theater, but you're probably not going to go see Hamilton for a while.
Yeah.
So I like took a break. So I took a break. But last night being with the Rob as a podcast, like Survivor World, they're all so enthusiastic and there were so many survivors there. I was like, I got the bug again. I'm gonna give Jeff a buzz.
He's like, Jeff,
yeah,
come on.
Like, come on.
Just one more game. One more game.
It's not that I fucked it up. I don't feel like I didn't have a bad experience. I want more. Let it rain.
Yeah.
Let it rain.
I'm ready. But time is so distorted because you don't have your phone or anything. So you just know the sun is setting and the sun is rising.
Yeah.
So you like, so the night feels like 29 hours long. Like, when is the sun ever going to come again? So
I know. And then you miss 3 dinners and then you go home.
I have an interesting, Survivor thing.
Yeah.
When we did The Office, the reason The Office looks the way it does is Greg Daniels, who show ran The Office, got the cameraman from Survivor to shoot it. So they knew how to shoot documentary style. So that's why it looks so in the moment. So
that's
there you go.
Cool. That's cool. Yeah, it was interesting being there with the way they like capture everything. So I want to talk about Traitors.
Yeah.
You were great on Traitors.
Thank you.
What a great experience.
Gone
you were
too
great.
Soon.
Dude, but you know what? You did great. Listen, you were there forever as far as I'm concerned. So two things. First of all, we still What happened at the reunion that we didn't see? Is there anything from the reunion that happened that we didn't see?
Nothing like of note. Like, it was just like silly questions. I mean, listen, this reunion is run by Andy Cohen, who's obsessed with the Housewives. So I felt like they trimmed it back a lot. It felt very Housewife heavy. It was like, Jesus Christ, if I had to hear one more thing about a Housewife or another, I'm like, they're not even married. It was that. But so that was really it. I think everything else, that they just trimmed the fat. I think the network did a good job of showing, like, really representing the reunion for what it was.
So, controversial opinion.
Oh, boy.
I love Housewives. I love Traitors. There's something about the way in which Housewife culture feels more powerful than even the rules of the game, because it felt like Candace both was not enamored of Rob the way everyone else was, but also brought Housewife rules to the Traitors game and was more worried about Housewife politics than winning, because obviously the game was changing. She doesn't want to vote for Lisa. It feels like she cared more about off-screen future politics than what was happening on the show. Do you think there's a problem of, like, kind of like the Housewife mafia on Traitors?
No, I just think that the Housewife players were not strategic and they weren't thinking as a gamer. I think that Rob, even though he's from Love Island, which is not a strategic game, he was thinking of having alliances in and outside of the turret, whereas the Housewives only focus on, we're going to protect our crew in the turret, which was their fatal flaw. Candace did, she made decisions and got rid of her greatest asset. She, like, this didn't make it to camera, but after Portia got banished, me and Candace, we were so broken up about it. We went to the ballroom together, and I was like, listen, Candace, I want to talk to you. I was like, I think I know that you are faithful. I can feel it. I know you are. And I may be wrong, and you don't know what I am, but I'll tell you this. If I am a traitor, I will never say your name in the turret, and if I'm a faithful, I will always defend you at the round table. And I'm asking for the same thing for you. She was like, I got you, girl. And the first time I said Lisa's name, she said it to Lisa. She got rid of her. I was going to ride with her as far. So she didn't do a good job of getting allies to keep her through the game. Once Lisa was gone, she lost, like, her biggest play in the game.
Such a good thing for you to say. You did the right thing.
Yeah. I was like, I don't know what she was, but I mean, she obviously knew what I was because she was a traitor. But, you know, I was like, I'll protect you. I'll be your ally, whichever way it goes down. Yeah. So I think the Housewife needs to think like gamers. You can't think like, this is not, you're not turning tables, Teresa Giudice. You're playing the game of traitors, you know?
So I had Dorinda on the show, loved talking to Dorinda, had a blast, everything I hoped she would be. I'm a huge fan of Ron Funches. He's been on this show. He's incredible. I love Ron. What happened?
Here's the thing about Ron. Ron went into this game, this strategy game, but it's also a social game. And Ron was not trying to play with any of us socially. I would sit down with Ron in the foyer, in the thing, in the kitchen, and try to strike up a conversation. He's just like, yeah. So it's like, so you can't go out and say, oh, no one wanted to talk to me, be friends with me. Like, I felt ostracized. When you ostracize yourself, people try to be friends with Ron and try to, because that's, like, again, it's a social game also. So you got to build connections that aren't just about who we were voting tonight. Like, you got to drop little things so people feel connection to you, or else they don't want to play the game with you.
So I hear that. But none of that would lead people to think he was a traitor. I guess what I would say is, when Ron is kind of repeatedly somebody people want to vote for, mm-hmm. is it because they really thought he might be a traitor, or because he hadn't played a good social game, so it was sort of cost-free to vote for
him? I think it was more the social game was like, playing the bad social game was his undoing. Because he effed us all with the Portia thing. Like, he swayed the entire group.
I know.
And we could have gotten the traitor out on the first night. We could have been the only group, because they were awful faithfuls, by the way. Because this show is not casting faithfuls. They're casting red flags. All of them. They're awful. And so we ended up, like, he sweared us off at Donna, and Portia ended up going home. And so, like, that was a really weird for everyone. Everyone was like, why were you so gung-ho about Portia? So it was that and also the social game. People were like, you're not talking to us. Like, what are you really thinking? And we thought it was the Donna effect, because Donna was very vocal at first. Donna was talking. After the first night, she got really quiet and really insular. So we were like, something is off with that. Like, I think the pressures of being a traitor were getting to her already. And that's why she just kind of recoiled. So we thought that was Ron, too.
I'm sympathetic to Ron, because I know what it's like to be to feel He's an odd guy, but he's so funny and he's so smart and he's so talented. And I feel like he didn't find his groove with the group. That's all.
Well, also, I will say after the show, I have like seen, because I, you know, I didn't know much about Ron going in. After the show, and now the show is done, he, like when we do press stuff together, he's very sweet. But in the context of the game, he was so quiet and wouldn't talk to anyone really. And I wanted him and Dorinda to get into it at the reunion. I wanted to know what the hell did she ask them?
What happened between them?
Nothing. I don't know. I have no idea. Like, no one knows.
No one knows.
And Dorinda also will randomly FaceTime you. Yeah, like the other day, I was just in my hotel room. She just FaceTimed me. I was like, hey, girl, this feels inappropriate. and I tried to ask her, and she didn't know either. So I'm like, what is this thing Ron knows that he hasn't told anyone?
Last question for you.
No, I'm engaged. Stop it.
Me too. Timothée Chalamet. Let's show the clip. Oh, stop. He's fantastic. Shut up. Let's show the clip.
I admire people, and I've done it myself, to go on a talk show and go, hey, we got to keep movie theaters alive. You know, we got to keep this genre alive. And I don't want to be working in ballet or opera or, you know, things where it's like, hey, keep this thing alive, even though no one cares about this anymore. All respect to the ballet and opera people out there. I just lost 14 cents in viewership. But,
damn. First of all, I'm finding out now that Matthew McConaughey is in this clip.
Did you see, though, that the LA, I think, ballet company made, you can get a 20% discount with the code word Chalamet?
I saw that.
Well done.
You're a trained opera singer.
Yeah.
What do you think about what Tim said there?
I think that people are blowing this clip out of proportion. If you watch the full context of the thing, he's not shitting on opera and shitting on ballet. First of all, his entire family are ballerinas. Like his mom, his sister, his cousin, his grandfather, his niece, everyone. They're all doing pirouettes all day long. Okay. So he wasn't shitting on that. He was just saying, like, and as someone from the opera world, opera is very gatekeepy, and it is only, they think that only rich white people like opera, which is not true. So I think he's speaking of, like, it's a dying art form that way. Like, people in urban areas and urban communities and inner city people don't feel like they can go to opera because it's not for them. And opera is dying, y'all. People, like, these companies cannot afford, so many opera houses have closed in the past 3 years in America, you would gag at how many. So he's not wrong. So he's just saying that content, like, and he doesn't want that to happen to film, which a lot of us don't. So I think people blew this way out of proportion, and it was not what the internet is painting it out to be.
I agree with you. And it's, well, what's interesting about it is, to me, the backlash gets a kind of part of the problem. Because, like, what he's saying is, hey, if you're part of an art that's like, if you support this because it's good for the world, he's saying, no, I want to make stuff that is just profitable because people want to see it, not because they think they're being good people.
Yeah.
Right? And like, that's true in media too. Like, there's a lot of great media. Like, that's one of the things we try to do at Crooked, which is make like kind of worthy content that we think, content, fuck. Make worthy shows and tell conversations that are worthwhile, that people check out, not because they feel like it makes them good people, but because they just want to. Yeah. They want to go see something entertaining. Like, they want to go see the movie you're making.
That's the thing in our company. In our company is just like, make something undeniable. My problem sometimes is with movies that get made trying to win awards. I say, like, make a great movie that entertains people, and then the awards come. Bridesmaids got nominated for 2 Oscars. I got people shitting in the sink and in the street. Like, that is not, we're not like, oh, we're going to get an Oscar for this. So, like, entertain first, and then, you know, then it comes when it comes.
Yeah. I think that's right.
Thank you.
Last question.
And when you do the Pavarotti movie, you can cast me as Pavarotti.
Oh, my God, please.
I don't look like him, but we can do a lot of makeup and make it look like it.
This is my new obsession, by the way.
Honestly, that's a good idea. That's just a good idea. Sometimes you hear a good idea. That's a good idea.
Yeah.
So wait, you have, Monet, a new, you're doing a stand-up tour.
Yes.
Bad knees. I just assume, once you're over 30, when you walk down the stairs, the last bit right before your foot touches the stair, that's luck. You know what I mean? Like, your knee's gonna hurt a little bit on every stair. And that's just what it is to have knees, don't you think?
I just think as I'm getting older, my body and my joints are just making sounds I did not know that they made. Because they say the black don't crack, but my joints absolutely do. And it's just like, I'm like, Jesus Christ. I'm like sometimes getting off of my sofa, I'm not kidding, it sounds like there's an active shooter in my home.
First of all, I'm 63. Fuck you guys.
Paul, you have a head full of hair. Okay, Paul.
Thank you.
I wish.
Yeah, the top of my head is like 75. Yeah, well, what do you like about getting older so far in your 30s, younger than me and even still younger than Paul?
I think I do like the wisdom I'm getting, and I also love the amount of I don't give a fuck I'm getting to. Like little things, I'm like, you know what? If you don't like it, that's not my problem. Like, what other thing can be none of my business? And that has, the older I get, the more I believe that, and I just love being on the side of things. Yeah, in my 20s, I cared so much about everything.
Yeah,
everything totally bothered me. Yeah,
the worst thing in the world is guys who get older who try to stay young, and it's like, what the fuck are you doing? You're not fooling anybody. Like, are you wearing a baseball cap and like shorts? Like, you're like in your 50s, you look like a fucking idiot. Like, put on a fucking suit and be an adult. Adult life is the greatest. Look, we've got martinis. Come on. Who wants to be a kid? I hated being a kid.
Cheers. And you know, I was going to wear a suit tonight, but I couldn't get it up to clean as Paul. Next time I'll wear a suit.
You look great, my friend.
Yeah, there's the challenge of. I agree with everything you just said, but then there's also the other side of it, which is remaining curious and having a plastic and supple mind. That's a challenge, which is not being young, but it's connected to being young.
No, here's the thing. If you start to think old and you start to go like, oh, I hate all this new stuff. I hate, like, how many old people you know, like, oh, the music today is terrible. Yeah. It's like, no, like, fuck off. The music today is good. It's just you don't know it. Like, grow old gracefully. Don't try to be like, I'm a hipster, but at the same time, like, kind of go like, no, everything that people are doing now is vital the way that when I was coming up was vital.
Yeah.
Don't be old, you know, don't be old in your brain.
Hey, don't go anywhere. There's more of Love It or Leave It coming up.
Love It or Leave It is brought to you by ZBiotics. If there's a surefire way to wake up feeling fresh after drinks with friends, it's with pre-alcohol. ZBiotics pre-alcohol probiotic drink is the world's first genetically engineered probiotic. It was invented by PhD scientists to tackle rough mornings after drinking. Here's how it works. When you drink, alcohol gets converted into a toxic byproduct in the gut. It's buildup of this byproduct, not dehydration. That's to blame for rough days after drinking. Pre-alcohol produces an enzyme to break this byproduct down. Just remember to make pre-alcohol your first drink of the night. Drink responsibly and you'll feel your best tomorrow. We love ZBiotics. Huge fans.
Love ZBiotics. Trying never to have a drink without it.
Yeah. It's always, we brought on the road. We were in Australia.
Mm-hmm. Sure did.
It was a boon. March is a marathon of social events. It is. Well, maybe for some people. What's wrong with me? From the slopes to the bracket watch parties to Guinness on St. Patrick's Day. Oh, man. I gotta figure out a social life, I think. Pre-alcohol is the tool you need to fully enjoy the end of winter. Go to ZBiotics.com/loveit to learn more and get 15% off your first order when you use code LOVEIT at checkout. ZBiotics is backed with a 100% money-back guarantee, so if you're unsatisfied for any reason, they'll refund your money, no questions asked. Remember to head to ZBiotics.com/loveit and use the code LOVEIT at checkout for 15% off.
The country feels like it's falling apart right before our eyes, and the people inside it are being silenced.
So we're going to East 26th Street and Nicolet Avenue, which is where Alex Preti was executed by ICE and Border Patrol.
That is not a headline. That is a human life. And it is all happening right now. Do you worry about your own safety being involved in all this?
Yes, but it doesn't really feel like there's another option, you know?
And of course they use a 5-year-old child as bait. And of course they're doing all these horrible, bad things because they don't know what they're doing. They've been told that they're going to get rid of the worst, then they have absolute immunity. And they've been told that nothing they do will they ever be held accountable for.
On my show, Runaway Country, we go where the headlines hit home, from communities under threat to the people fighting to be heard. New episodes of Runaway Country drop every Thursday. Subscribe wherever you get your podcasts or watch on YouTube.
So here's the deal that I'm striking, because my fiance is younger than me and younger than Monet. just to give you a sense.
Definitely that younger than me.
And much younger than Paul.
Oh, man.
Because I'm younger than Paul and Monet's younger than me. But I'm going to try to remain curious and open, but I will just hand them my phone and just be like, I can't fix Instagram. Can you just do my Instagram? And that's just going to be the deal I make.
There's no shame in that.
There's no shame in that.
That's great.
And speaking of not having any shame, it's time for a special segment we're calling I Don't Care, I Love It.
I don't care.
I love it. Here's how it works. We'll take turns defending the people, places, things, and haircuts that we refuse to feel guilty about loving. A guilty pleasure, as it were. First up, Paul.
Yes.
What's something that you don't care if people don't like that you like?
I loved the 2024 campaign. With the minute that Biden dropped out, I'm not anti-Biden. I loved when Kamala came in, and he. Let me tell you why. Because there was 3 months of this beautiful moment where our side was going USA, USA, which I think is the most, when the right does it, it's the most aggressive, jingoistic bullshit. I hate it. But when our side did it, I was like, we all love America. We all, for that 3 months, we all loved America. And then it went to shit. But like, you know, but like, I thought it was beautiful. I was so I was so proud to be an American during that.
Yeah, because it was like we had one Ayatollah and was very old. We got rid of that Ayatollah. Yeah. And then we had a new generation of Ayatollah with all the same policies.
I agree.
I'm really sorry I said that. I have several martinis. But I agree with you. Nationalism is just patriotism for assholes.
Yeah.
And it's nice to have real patriotism, and we should bring it back, and we should own patriotism because the flag is our flag. It's not, they don't own the flag just because they put it on their back of their trucks.
You can make it ugly or you can make it like good.
I agree with that. Yeah. It's a really good point. Monet, what is something you don't care that you love that people don't love?
Okay, I love selfie sticks. They had a moment and they were so useful. You know that thing where you're trying to take a picture in a group and they're like, my arm isn't long enough. Can you do it? No, bitch, I don't want to do it, okay? I don't want to have my arms over the whole group. A selfie stick takes out all the pressure for everyone. You put your little phone on the little stick, extend it. I had one that had a little automatic recliner on it. I was press my button and go, and we take our picture. It was great. And then somewhere along the line, we all got shamed for our selfie sticks. I had to burn mine like I burned my bra. And it was just the worst. So and now people are ashamed to use selfie sticks. And I think we should use them again.
I think that's a really good point.
Thank you.
I genuinely do. I haven't thought about it. I'm hearing this for the first time. You're right. And I'll tell you something else. I think the reason there was a backlash is because girls like them.
Oh, you think?
Yeah. Yes.
It's misogyny.
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah. Misogyny.
Yes. The ugly head of misogyny pops up its head yet again.
There you go.
With the selfie stick.
With the fucking selfie stick. Next time we have a woman on the show, whenever that is, I'll ask.
Someday.
All right. Listen, here's my pitch. Blind dates, old-fashioned style. Okay? You have two friends. You're like, you know what? You're at a lunch or a dinner, or you're seeing an old friend. You're like, oh, they're single. I have a friend who's single. They're both very good looking, or the same level of good looking. I think they'd be good for each other. No longer are we going to say, here's who it is. Go look them up on Instagram. Here's who they are. Here's a picture that I have from my phone. No, you're going to say to your friends, when are you free? We'll set you up. Bring a red fucking rose with you because you're meeting a stranger. You're going to have no information. All you'll know is that people that love you think it maybe. And you will go through the old-fashioned experience without the algorithm, without the pictures on the internet, learning about a person from square one. If you were meant to be, seeing the picture before wouldn't make it more likely. And if you're not meant to be, you had an interesting conversation.
Okay. Wow.
But I think we should bring the true blind date back. Bring it back. That's my pitch.
Okay.
That is our way to strike a blow against the machine. Okay. Thank you.
Love it.
You know what?
And don't go for dinner on a first date. That's serious killer shit. Like that, you're locking yourself into upwards of $65. And maybe an hour and a half with someone that you are not going to enjoy, go for coffee, go for an ice cream. That's max 15, 20 minutes, and then you can leave and then decide what you want to do.
So I'll concede that
I was single in my 20s, and then I was briefly single again in my 40s. But my move was, if this is a drink, do you mind if I order dinner? It's time for Second Thoughts. This is the part of the show where we kind of figure out if I made a mistake. All right. All right. First up, let's see. They aren't going to know about that.
Would you like another martini, John?
Okay, the producer suggests that I should regret saying that the swastika was a, quote, great design, end quote. I don't regret that.
How could that go bad?
In terms of pure, look, here's the thing. In terms of earned media, right? Like, the swastika, they never did a single political ad in the U.S. We all know it. Like, they got that brand out there. They got it out there.
And I will say, it did belong to someone else. Like, that was true. It did belong to another. Yeah, and it was stolen. Yeah, and it was stolen and co-opted by these people. So, now, so
they, still, honestly, that's the worst thing they ever did.
Yeah. As you sip your martini.
Oh, my God.
Genuinely a little bit drunk. All right. It says here, quote, The Shining's pretty good. I don't regret saying that. It is pretty good.
Yeah, there you go.
Let's see. Paul's intro was a mess. I don't regret it. It was kind of fun. We're going to leave it in, I think.
I like it.
Didn't ask Monet for a little opera.
Oh.
I wanted to do that, but I didn't want to put you on the spot.
Really?
Yes.
Okay, and I have...
You need to stand for this, or...?
No, so I'll do it sitting.
I like sitting opera.
Nice. Yeah, a queen likes to sit when she sings.
Vira viso o luoghi ameni in cui lieti in cui sereni si tranquillo I di passai della prima gioventù.
There we go.
Beautiful. Come on.
Oh, thank you. Wow. I have a warm up. Wow. I'm drinking. Only for Paul and John.
Wow.
And my final second thought, I took Paul's nice comment about Kamala and brought Ayatollahs into it. And that is our show. Thank you to Paul Feig and Monet Exchange. Check out Monet's stand-up tour. Housemaids is available now. We'll see you next week at the UCB Theater. Next week we're at the UCB. There are 233 days until the midterms. Have a great night and have a great weekend.
Yes.
If you're already scrolling endlessly, which we know you are, don't forget to follow us at Crooked Media on Instagram, TikTok, and all the other ones for original content, community events, and more. You can also find Love It or Leave It on YouTube for videos of your favorite segments and other YouTube-exclusive content. And if you want to type our praises or rip us a new one, consider dropping us a review. Finally, you can join Crooked's Friends of the Pod subscription community for ad-free Love It or Leave It and Pod Save America episodes, subscriber-exclusive pods, and more. Sign up at crooked.com/friends. Love It or Leave It is a Crooked Media production. It's written and produced by me, John Lovett. Kendra James is our executive producer. Bill McGrath is our producer. Hallie Kiefer is our head writer. Sarah Lazarus is our senior staff writer. And Jocelyn Kaufman, Peter Miller, Alan Pierre, and Suba Argwal are our writers. Jordan Cantor is our editor. Kyle Seglin and Charlotte Landis provide audio support. Stephen Colon is our audio engineer. Our theme song is written and performed by Sure Sure. Thanks to our designer, Sammy Caderna-Reeves, for creating and running all of our visuals, which you can't see because this is a podcast. And to our digital producers, David Tolles, Claudia Shang, Mia Kelman, Delon Villanueva, Jay Banks, Milo Kim, and Rachel Gajewski for filming and editing video each week so that you can. Love It or Leave It is produced by Lee Eisenberg, and our head of production is Matt DeGroat. And our production staff is proudly unionized with the Writers Guild of America East. It's Love It or Leave It. Love It or Leave It. It's Love It or Leave It.
The country feels like it's falling apart right before our eyes, and the people inside it are being silenced.
So we're going to East 26th Street and Nicolette Avenue, which is where Alex Preddy was executed by ICE and Border Patrol.
That is not a headline. That is a human life. And it is all happening right now. Do you worry about your own safety being involved in all this?
Yes, but it doesn't really feel like there's another option, you know?
And of course they use a five-year-old child as bait. And of course they're doing all these horrible, bad things because they don't know what they're doing. They've been told that they're going to get rid of the worst, then they have absolute immunity. And they've been told that nothing they do will they ever be held accountable for.
On my show, Runaway Country, we go where the headlines hit home, from communities under threat to the people fighting to be heard. New episodes of Runaway Country drop every Thursday. Subscribe wherever you get your podcasts or watch on YouTube.